You're listening to Restoring Order, a dissident right podcast focused on American politics and culture. I'm your host, Patrick Casey. George Floyd died after Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, not Chauvin, I was mispronouncing it a few streams back. Derek Chauvin kneeled on his neck for 8 to 9 minutes. And I'll just say this right off the bat. I think Derek Chauvin probably overdid it. Now, there are many other factors. There are multiple autopsies and medical reports that have come out, and we'll talk about some of those. But it does look like he did, according to the complaint filed against him, he's been charged with two things, I believe. Manslaughter, murder, third degree murder, I think. And there were two charges. I forget the second one. But basically, he's been charged with two things. And in the complaint against him, it states that the kneeling on the guy's neck, kneeling on George Floyd's neck, was actually a legitimate form of restraint. So it's not that he just did this, because we're laymen. We're not familiar with all of the various ways that police officers are trained to apprehend a suspect, to restrain a suspect, and so forth. So it's very easy for a layman to look at the clip and say, "Wow, he's kneeling on his neck. It's totally terrible." But the fact of the matter is that there is evidence that was a legitimate form of restraint. Now, I think the only thing that's really in contention at this point is whether or not he overdid it by staying on, how long he stayed on his neck. George Floyd's on the ground. He's saying he can't breathe, and he still stayed on his neck. And according to what I've seen, I believe it was the complaint filed against Derek Chauvin, he stayed on his neck for 2+ minutes after George Floyd was incapacitated, after he was unresponsive, whatever. So that's evidence that there's probably a big issue. If there's any wrongdoing, it's that he overdid it, right? He overdid it. He should have gotten off his neck the minute that he became unresponsive. But the fact of the matter is that, again, it was a legitimate restraint, and the guy died because he had all of these health issues. He had heart disease, he had a few others, and someone who was in good health, the average person would not have died in that situation. So that's something to keep in account too. The idea that Derek Chauvin was motivated by this blind, racial animus, just racial hatred against black people, and decided to kneel on this guy's neck and kill him because he's black, that doesn't hold up. And it's important to keep in mind that that is the narrative that's being promoted, right? Because if it's just a question of a police officer who was a little reckless, didn't really follow protocol, maybe wasn't paying as close of attention as he should have, that's a different narrative, because then that's not part of Black Lives Matter at that point. What that is at that point is police negligence. And that if that is indeed what happened, yeah, that should be, he should face charges, sure. But it's also worth pointing out that George Floyd was on fentanyl, and he did have traces of methamphetamine in his system. So the guy was very unhealthy. The guy was very unhealthy. And again, as many people have posted on Twitter and Telegram and elsewhere, George Floyd has a lengthy criminal history. He has weapons, illegal weapons charges, drug charges, and he obviously served 5 years in prison for a home robbery, a home invasion. He went inside a woman's house with some of the other guys in his crew, pointed a gun at her, I think at her stomach, at her face, and basically said, "Where's the loot?" Right? That's despicable behavior. And the story that's being promoted in the media is that he turned his life around. He's a new guy now, is he? Right now, he's out doing drugs. He's being belligerent in public. He's resisting arrest. So now that doesn't mean you have the right to kill him, but you have to put these things in perspective. Razing cities to the ground because this gangbanger, drug addict, who had terrible health, got himself into a stupid situation, and the police maybe overreacted a bit. So while the initial coroner's report did state that he died from asphyxiation, that he didn't die from asphyxiation, that he died, I believe, from a heart attack, something along those lines. There was an independent coroner's report that came out, I think that was promoted, or at least initiated by George Floyd's family, and that stated that he died, from homicide. So the toxicology report also, the recent toxicology report, that does state that he died from homicide too. So they're saying that he did have these. It's a very nuanced position, or rather nuanced situation. It's one that requires a great degree of nuance. But as we understand, as far as Black Lives Matter and Antifa are concerned, and they're two separate things, but they are basically part of the same thing. There are some subcultural and perhaps slight ideological and strategic differences between the two, but the idea that they're totally separate, that Black Lives Matter is peaceful and they just want to go out and protest, which is what many conservatives are telling us, and Antifa, these white Antifa, white supremacists or something, or the violent ones, that's just not the case at all. And we know that. We know that, right? So did George Floyd deserve to die? No. But was he this great, you know, shining exemplar of human virtue, a real fixture of the community? No, he really wasn't. He was a scumbag. He was. He did terrible things. And he, you know, by all appearances, continued to live a wicked and immoral life, right? And I wouldn't be surprised if he did all sorts of other crimes that he wasn't, you know, wasn't caught for. So that's my take on George Floyd and Derek Chauvin. Now, Derek Chauvin has been charged with two things. I don't think it looks good for him, just given the state of just given everything that's happened. Now, we did see riots. You did see the riots when it came to the shooting of Trayvon, the shooting of Mike Brown, and both Zimmerman and Darren Wilson got off, right? So it's not, that was 6 to 8 years ago. So we'll see if there's any justice left in this country in this case. But the idea that Derek Chauvin needs to be locked up for the rest of his life, or that, you know, hate crime charges need to be filed against him. No, there has been zero evidence provided, that I've seen at the very least, that Derek Chauvin was motivated by a sense of anti-Black racial animus. I just don't see it. I just don't see it. We'll see if more evidence comes out in the case. But at the most, I don't know what the appropriate charge would be, but it just seems like he was a little negligent. Now, when it comes to negligence with human life, yeah, cops need to be held accountable for that. Let's put this into perspective, right? What's being promoted by Black Lives Matter, by many conservatives, and basically anyone who's implicitly or explicitly endorsing, supporting, and participating in these riots, because they are riots, maybe there have been some peaceful protests, but there has been tons of violence, property destruction. We've seen so many clips come out of this of just innocent people having their property destroyed, having their, you know, livelihoods ruined, and being physically attacked, right? It's been disgusting. The narrative that's being promoted, the Black Lives Matter narrative, and this isn't a new one, it's been going on for some time, is that there is an epidemic of police violence. There is an epidemic of white cops targeting Black people because they are Black, to kill them, to injure them, and to falsely imprison them. There's probably some degree of police bias, but given the fact that Black people disproportionately commit crime, I wonder how much of that bias is pattern recognition, right? Is that pattern recognition, or is that something else? Does that mean they hate Black people? Are there any white cops out there who just irrationally hate Black people? Maybe I'd say there's at least one out there, but in all of these instances, once you know, Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, and George Floyd, you just don't see it. So there's some facts that need to be put into perspective here. Black Lives Matter states, again, that Black people, particularly unarmed Black men, are disproportionately the victims of police shootings. And that is true. Black men, Black people are 13% of the population, and they're 25% of police homicide victims, right? Or killed by police, right? That's not technically homicide. So, but again, keep in mind that they commit more acts of crime, right? So if the population that's committing the most robberies, the most violent crime, the most murders, right, the most, auto thefts and so forth, if that demographic is killed at a higher rate by police, it's probably because they're doing things that get them into the kind of situations where the police have justifiable, the police are justified in shooting these people. Now, the idea that police are just going out there and, again, shooting innocent Black people, unarmed Black people, that's the whole thing with, this cop shot someone who's unarmed. I looked into Derek Chauvin a bit because there were claims that were being circulated. Oh, he had all of these complaints filed against him. Now, I didn't look into every claim filed against Derek Chauvin, every complaint rather. But one of them that I did look into was an unarmed Black person that he shot. He and a few other officers shot him. Well, you have people on Twitter saying, oh, he shot this unarmed Black person, which is evidence that clearly he's racist. Well, you look into that case, and the unarmed Black guy in question was trying to steal an officer's gun. That's just one of those things you don't do. We talked about this with the McMichaels in the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery. If you have a gun and someone is being aggressive and someone is being violent and they're trying to take your gun, particularly if you're you're a cop, that person should, and I think in most cases does, have the right to use that gun to defend themselves against you. Because if they take that gun from you, you're at their mercy, right? You have no obligation to let someone steal your gun, because at that point, your life is in their hands. And yeah, there's no, that's not how a free country works. If you're a free man, which we are not really, but there's still kind of this pretext that we live in a free society, you should have the right to defend yourself, and you do not have the right to turn over your weapon to someone else who is taking it by force, and just, figure out whether, we'll wait and see whether or not he wants to kill me. That's just not how this works. That's not how civilization works. Some of the other facts that are important to keep in mind, shootings of unarmed black men in America have declined significantly since 2016. But before then, they weren't even that high either. In 2016, I believe, there were 13 unarmed black men killed by cops. The year before, it was somewhere in the 40s or the 50s. No, I think it was 36. But that number has continued to decline. And in fact, I believe last year in 2019, there were more cops killed by black men than vice versa. And in fact, that shouldn't come as a surprise, because for a while we've had data that shows that cops are 2.5 times as likely to be shot by a black person than vice versa. And also black cops, because keep in mind, this isn't just about the police. It's also an accusation of white racism on behalf of, white, anti-black racial animus on behalf of these cops who are involved in these shootings. Black cops are 3 times more likely to use deadly force in these altercations. I guess the narrative or the explanation for that the left would offer is that, these black cops are just trying, they're coons or something of that sort. They use all these racial slurs against black conservatives, black cops, and so forth. It's pretty, pretty disgusting stuff. Yeah, but my understanding of that is, the way I see it, is that black cops get it a little bit more than white cops do. They probably understand, they were raised in the hood, or they've had to deal with these kinds of situations before they became cops. And they understand, they probably have like a better sense for when, they probably understand a black man, if you're a black man, you probably understand black men better than a white guy understands black men. So they're probably under no illusions about how this works. If this guy's coming at me, no, I'm shooting him. I know what's going to happen next. Right. So that's just the way I see it. So we're told that there's this huge epidemic. There's not a huge epidemic. How many of the people at these rallies could tell you any of these facts? And those that do, the more intellectual leftists, right, they're promoting a broader agenda. But what they would tell you is, sure, all of that stuff's true, but why are black people more prone to crime? And that's when you get into the broader debate about capitalism and white privilege and all of these other things. And as we know, those narratives do not, to the extent that slavery was responsible, it continues to be responsible for the poor socioeconomic status of black people, it's probably a pretty minor factor, because we've seen that there are many groups out there who do not have the elusive and the nebulous white privilege benefits, and some of them actually do better than white people, right? Indian Americans are one of the highest, if not the highest, I think Orthodox Jews might be above Indian Americans, but Indian Americans have a very high average income. Asian Americans do well, Jews obviously do well too, and there are various reasons for that. But the point is, and let's be honest, IQ is probably the biggest one. It's probably the biggest one. And you see racial stratification all over the world, and it usually follows a similar pattern. With Indians, it's important to keep in mind that we've been through, most of them have come here legally. So those are people that we've selected for, generally the upper strata of India, basically people who are coming here through on, tech visas and in other ways to get in as well. So it's what's important to keep in mind when you look at various the success and achievements of various groups. I mean, if you brought all Indians over here, are they all going to be, what is it like making an average of $80,000 per year? No, absolutely not. But when you're bringing in the more educated Indians, the higher IQ Indians, yeah, that's the dynamic that you're going to get. So I think IQ is a big factor, but I'm not a total biological determinist. I do think that black people could be better off. I think black people could be better off. And I think that, some of the things that conservatives commonly cite, such as, having better, leaders in the black community, having strong father figures, promotion of Christianity, conservatism. Yeah, I think if black people adhered to these norms, and it's not like they're incapable of doing that, I think they'd be better off, right? I think if this culture of gangbanging, of violence, of crime and so forth, if that was done away with, it'd be better. But how we get to that point, that's never going to be something that black people just kind of come to on their own. I'm pretty pessimistic when it comes to that. I think it's the kind of thing where we're going to have to restore order politically and totally reorient society. And then at that point, point, future generations, not just the blacks, but in general, will be raised in a more healthy environment. And, you know, again, there are the biological differences, the IQ differences, sure. But, you know, I don't think any race is like fully achieved its potential in terms of where everyone is. So, you know, like it or not, there's going to be some degree of diversity in this country. People who fantasize about sending blacks back to Africa or something like that. It's never going to happen. It's not necessary. I think what we really need is, you know, some degree of freedom of association and, you know, removing the negative externalities in the form of welfare abuse, right? Because a lot of the money that we pay through our taxes goes to subsidize these irredeemable lifestyles that people live in these poor communities. So it's just an important thing to keep in mind. Obviously, if nothing changes long term, there is a broader discussion that needs to be had about diversity in this country and whether or not the country is going to be able to work, right? But yeah, I just want to go on record in saying that if people hate this country, if they hate white people, if they hate Western civilization, they should leave on their own. They should. This is not, you know, this is what we're about. We're not going to change that. We're not doing away with our history because people hate us. But I don't support forced removals unless we're talking about illegal immigrants. But that's just the law right there. And even then, as opposed to, you know, massive deportations, the way to get, you know, to send those people home is to reduce the incentives that keep them here. But, you know, in the wake of the kneeling, right, it's usually a shooting in these cases, but it's a kneeling in this case. We've seen these cities just totally razed to the ground in the case of Minneapolis. Last night there was, actually the last few nights and today too, we've seen the Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, just totally gripped by unrest, by looting, property destruction, violence against cops. Over 60 members of the Secret Service have been injured. And I saw that happening before my eyes because on Friday and Saturday, I was marching with Black Lives Matter. I streamed everything, right? I didn't have any bad intentions. I just wanted to go and kind of experience it, document it, and I did. And I would say it didn't really get violent until nighttime and until I left, basically. But I will say that I did see cops getting injured in front of me. I did see the Secret Service, you know, officers. Some of them I'd see on three occasions walking away from the front line, holding their face, looking like they're in terrible pain and being escorted out. These protests, I mean, the rioters really were throwing rocks, were throwing water bottles, were throwing and fireworks. And I don't know if they had mace. I don't know if they had other stuff they were lobbing at the police. But it's just really despicable behavior. So we've seen, I mean, the stuff in Minneapolis was wild. That is, Ferguson was pretty bad. Ferguson was pretty bad, but I wasn't as tuned in, as clued in to politics back then. I followed it kind of briefly on 4chan, but I'll be honest, I predicted that these riots would last for a few days and maybe mostly in Minneapolis and that would be it. But just the sheer extent to which Minneapolis was lit on fire was really staggering. Right, you had massive buildings just totally razed to the ground. These aerial shots of Minneapolis just on fire. And obviously, you've had all of these innocent people. We've seen the clips of, you know, a driver who doesn't stop, doesn't get out of his car. And I'm not talking about people who run other people over, you know, getting pulled out of their car, getting beaten to death, someone who says the wrong thing, and just totally, totally disgusting behavior. So let's talk about the dynamic of those involved. There have been some on the right who have been pretty good about pointing out that yes, Antifa is involved in these, but you do have the fact that you have black mobs that are doing it too. And these people aren't members of Antifa. If they're members of anything, if they affiliate with any cause, it's Black Lives Matter. And conservatives who are attempting to whitewash Black Lives Matter and defend Black Lives Matter are totally off the rails. That's indefensible. Black Lives Matter has been responsible for so many violent, you know, acts of organized violence against Trump supporters, against white people, against conservatives in general, for years and years now. The shooting of the Dallas police officers can absolutely be linked to Black Lives Matter. I forget the guy's name, but he totally, Xavier something or other, that guy was totally influenced by Black Lives Matter. So attempting, I don't know what this is that the conservatives are trying to do by portraying it's the Black Lives Matter, the black people, basically. They're fine, but it's the white Antifa people that are the issue. Now, obviously, we know that white Antifa, white anarchists, these people are the scum of the earth. These people are absolute scum. And it's not an either or. That's the whole thing. We're always presented with some false choice that never, you know, that doesn't actually accurately describe the situation. So yes, in the case where of the worst rioting, which was in Minneapolis, that was largely black mobs. You probably had some white anarchists out there too, but though it seems like it got progressively whiter. The first day, and that was one of the worst days, it was mostly black people out there. I didn't see too many white faces. It was after that that Antifa, they decided to organize, they decided to get involved, but it was a very emergent, organic, grassroots thing that just happened in the black community there in Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities. They just decided they wanted to go riot. That's what they did, and it's nothing new. We've seen it time and time again. It's just how it goes. So I think it's good to blame both, right? We just want to accurately ascribe blame. Antifa, yes. White leftists, absolutely. But also, you know, these fairly apolitical black people, also Black Lives Matter. But I think a lot of the black people who are out there just wanted to riot. They just wanted to loot. They're burning down minority black-owned businesses. It's just kind of this Dionysian orgy of destruction. And stuff like that has no place in civilization. It absolutely doesn't. It doesn't. And so we've seen the establishment jump on the white supremacist narrative too. They're spreading the narrative that there are white supremacists who are responsible for the really bad stuff, right? Now, maybe there were some, you know, they'll say, oh, maybe Black Lives Matter. You know, they were out there protesting. They're doing it peacefully. But it was the white supremacists who were out there lighting these buildings on fire. It was the white supremacists who were, you know, antagonizing and initiating and doing most of the destruction. Of course, there's been no evidence provided for this. What evidence has been provided is social media posts. And the social media posts that I'm sure are in question, I haven't seen any of them. I'm sure law enforcement has witnessed some, you know, Wignats, Fed posting on Telegram, on Facebook, wherever else. And they're taking these as proof that white supremacists are infiltrating and doing this. Today, there was an article that stated that the police in Minneapolis, based on those who had been arrested, said that white supremacists had been arrested. They didn't name any. Didn't provide any evidence. So I need to see some real evidence of these claims before I believe them. And if any of this is actually true, it's probably a few idiots, right? Maybe there's like one guy who's in the KKK who's probably an FBI agent who burned a building down. But that in no way means that these riots are mostly or exclusively the result of anyone who's remotely right-wing. It just isn't the case. Now, we saw a video from last night, I believe, where you had what looked like 3 to 4 white guys who were beating up someone who was claimed to be a person of color. His skin tone didn't look that dark. And the video doesn't provide any context. You know, it provided a little context. There was an article in Vice. There was a video that just shows 10 seconds of these guys beating up a few other people and then running off. And the claim made in the article was that one of the witnesses to this attack, one of the friends of the guy who got beaten pretty badly, said that they saw some, you know, these white guys in one of these buildings, and that they, you know, confronted them and said, hey, what are you doing in there? They were lighting it on fire, they were looting it or something, and that the white guys became belligerent and then beat them up. Well, it's very clear that these white guys were not right wing. And in fact, I would wager that they're either apolitical, just like street people, right? Because you have people that are like, yeah, screw racists, screw Nazis, whatever else, but they're just kind of druggy, like individualists, right? You know, I remember living in San Diego. You'd meet those people there. You know, it's kind of funny too. There were protests in Portland a year or so ago, and you had some of those like street people, like they're not really gutter punks, but they're just, you know, kids that roam around, probably low socioeconomic status, maybe semi-homeless, who they're not in Antifa. They're not right wing by any means, but some of those people were attacking the anarchists because they didn't like them. So it's important to keep in mind, you just see people out there doing wanton acts of destruction. That doesn't mean they're ideologically Antifa. They're certainly not white supremacists. So either, regardless of whether the two main acceptable groups to blame for this are white Antifa or white supremacists. You did have Marco Rubio claiming that you had white supremacist far-right groups roaming millennial. You did have some, you know, relatively bigger names who were claiming that these far-right groups were engaging in these acts of destruction. I've seen no evidence of this, so I think we can safely discount it. I think you probably, like I said, had some really stupid Fed posts on the internet that the FBI picked up and then used to kind of bolster this claim. But then the claim that many are going for, including many in the alt-light, many conservatives, many in the Trump world, is that it's white Antifa. Black Lives Matter, as we previously discussed, the claim is that Black Lives Matter is totally innocent. They're just out there to peaceful protest, and then it's these white anarchists who are doing that. But again, it's not an either or. You have tons of Black Lives Matter people who are protesting. You probably have rioting, I should say. You probably have tons of apolitical black people who are out there rioting. And yes, you do have white Antifa. You do have white anarchists. You do have Hispanics too. You have people of all races really going out there and doing that. So it's not an either or thing. You're not forced to choose. We should be accurate and to the point and honest about what's really happening. So let's look at it this way. Why, from conservatives to leftists to the mainstream media, why is everyone blaming some form of white person for this? And the fact of the matter is that white people have been delegitimized, have been demoralized in this, in our society, right? It's very sick. There is a moral hierarchy, and white people, particularly straight white male Christians, are at the absolute bottom rung of that. So conservatives, they don't feel comfortable blaming minorities for anything. And the powers that be, the establishment media, left, liberals, and so forth, they obviously don't have any, they obviously have serious qualms about blaming minorities. With conservatives, it's probably more of like not wanting to scare away the black vote, right? They're trying to court the black vote, which is diluted and ill-fated. Yeah, obviously, the other side is actually trying to demonize white people. They're trying to take it further. So it's only the dissident right that's really been willing to, plus, some others. You have Matt Walsh, a few others that have been decent on this, even if they're bad overall, even if they're still controlled opposition. And in the case of Matt Walsh, he absolutely is. Even if that's the case, it's mostly the dissident right, plus a few honest names in right-wing politics who are pointing out that it's not just white people doing this. And I think it's important to, as we just did, go into the motivations. Why are people just only blaming white people? Why is it that you have ostensible conservatives who feel that they only can blame white people? It's very sick. And you have these white people, white conservatives, who feel just as if they just don't have the moral authority to call out minority crime when it comes about. And it absolutely, that's a huge part of this. It's not the only part, but it's definitely very troubling. But unsurprising to see that blame some flavor of white person. That's basically what it is. But it's just more of the same. We've grown accustomed to that. So now, every time someone who has previously said and done stupid things, really intellectually dishonest things on the right, comes out with a base take, there's always a swath of people who are saying, wow, this guy's base now. He's on our side, or I guess he's coming around. Say that with Charlie Kirk. They say that with Matt Walsh. These people are not your friends. The process by which these people arrive at their stated public opinions is different than the process that we go through. We look for the truth. We look for the good. Sure, we might strategically tailor our message and so forth. But what these people do is they think about what they can get away with saying. They go with what their bosses and what their donors want to say. You're telling me that Matt Walsh might come around when Ben Shapiro is his boss, when he has billionaire donors paying for his paycheck, right? When his livelihood is dependent upon fealty to the state of Israel? You think that guy's going to come around? What do you think he's going to become? A DLive streamer? Where's he going to get his money from if he starts telling the truth? So you guys still go back and listen to my half-pack speech. I went through all of this there. So many people, it's just this huge issue. You guys don't understand controlled opposition. Oh, it's okay. Don't feel bad. But look, the way controlled opposition works is that you have people out there who are telling you some true things, some honest things about the way the world works that are a bit controversial and certainly at odds with the prevailing progressive orthodoxy. But when you look at their worldview as a whole, it's a dead end. The reason Matt Walsh largely says these things, I believe, he's probably some degree of conservative authentically, and he probably doesn't like seeing black people and white anarchists burning cities to the ground. I mean, most people right of center don't. Most people in general kind of don't, unless you're a diehard believer in kind of the progressive ideology. So I think he probably on some level is honestly upset with what's happened. But keep in mind, this guy and others like him, Charlie Kirk, they want to make sure that the average white conservative doesn't come to our camp. They want to keep them in a place where they can be controlled, where their authentic populist energy, it doesn't get channeled into things that would actually upset the balance of power, right? They want to make sure that the state of Israel and the Israel lobby remain strong, remain paramount. They want to make sure that these billionaire donors, big business and so forth, are able to keep making money, keep profiting off of cheap labor, keep profiting off of our demographic displacement. And as a result of that, they have to tell the truth sometimes, right? What do you think if they just went out there and lied all the time? That no, people would clearly see that they're telling that they're just total nonsense. Why do you think Charlie Kirk changed his tune? Why do you think Charlie Kirk started, you know, saying immigration reform? Why, we saw that happen during the course of the Groyper War. He said, okay, I was wrong, right? That was one of my favorite moments of the Groyper War, when he looked down and he just had to swallow his pride and admit that the Groypers were right. He didn't frame it in that way, but he said, actually, I support the RAISE Act. Well, the RAISE Act is probably never going to pass. It's also not nearly enough. So it's not that he's not going out on that far of a limb. Right. He's not really taking that controversial of a pivot when he says, oh, I go from supporting unlimited immigration, basically, to supporting the RAISE Act. That's not that he's not sacrificing much. And again, once after Trump, once they try to promote Marco Rubio as an America First candidate, when he just will have positions or once elected policies that are no different than those that Paul Ryan would implement, you know, Charlie Kirk and Matt Walsh will pivot back to that. So that's how controlled opposition works. That's how the empire works. That's how globalism works, right? Globalism isn't just a left-wing thing. It's not right-wing in like a real sense, but there are right-wing globalists. And I would say the right-wing globalism, Conservatism Inc., these people are the people you have to be the most concerned about, the people that are selling lies to our people, but also mixing some truths in there to ensure that they stay basically on the Conservatism Inc. plantation. So I don't want to see any takes from you guys. Oh, wow, Matt Walsh is based. You can say that he has a good take, but when you start ascribing positive qualities to, you know, the overall state of his character, that's when I'm going to call you out, because that's not how this works. Now, if Matt Walsh actually disavows all of the stuff that we you know, take issue with here and disassociates from the Daily Wire, and that would be a little different, but not that he's just paying lip service to stuff that he knows conservatives want to hear. So please, guys, please, please keep this in mind. Please, I just, it kind of grates on my nerves to some extent, but I'm a very patient person when I see these things. These people are our enemies. These people are our enemies. And, you know, maybe if something crazy happened in the country and it was totally right versus left, we could be on the same side against the left to some extent. But these are the people that have called us Nazis, white supremacists for not wanting to be minorities in our homeland. So you're going to tell me that person's base because he takes issue with cities being razed to the ground? No, that's not how we're doing things. But again, we want to be open to people to come to our side. We want to continue bringing in bigger names in the conservative movement, you know, to our movement. We do. But we draw them into our orbit. That's what happened with Michelle Malkin. Michelle Malkin's not out there tweeting all of this terrible stuff and then saying, oh, actually, you know, actually I agree that immigration restriction is good. And then we're like, oh, please, please come to, you know, she's not on, you know, some Zionist billionaire's payroll and, you know. And, you know, we're still inviting her to speak at her conference because she had a good take on immigration. That's not how this works. These people need to be sincere, and they need, you know, maybe not go all the way, but they need to do a little bit more than have like a base take every now and then. So the best advice I could give you when it comes to understanding and, you know, accurately seeing these people in Conservatism Inc. for what they are is don't take them at their word. Don't take them at their word. Don't take them at face value. You have to understand the broader implications, the broader dynamics, and the thought processes by which these people arrive at the opinions that they voice publicly. So, and I speculated on social media that, you know, Ben Shapiro used to be way better on this stuff. He used to be very, very critical of Black Lives Matter. Maybe he is to some extent, but you had this interesting process during the 2016 election where, in opposition to the new direction that Donald Trump took the GOP and took conservatism, you had people who were anti-Trump and end up becoming less based. David French is a good example. Ben Shapiro is also a good example. He went on Radio 314 back in the day. He had decent takes on, I think, immigration and some identity stuff. He was obviously never an identitarian, at least not an identitarian of our sort. He's very identitarian in another way. But all of that changed during 2016 because there was an incentive to go along with Trumpism, but there was also a lot of pushback from the donor class and from other types against Trumpism. So people kind of chose their side on those, there. And Ben Shapiro has been a little, he understood that. He's trying to strike a balance between the two. But the point is that Ben Shapiro understands race realism. He does. And so I think there's a good chance he might be telling Matt Walsh, at the very least, he's giving him the go-ahead to tweet this stuff out. I also think Matt Walsh understands that he overdid it when he called for the executions of the McMichaels before any real evidence other than a 15-second clip of the altercation was released before these guys were charged, let alone, you know, convicted, let alone charged, or charged, let alone convicted of anything. Right. So it's important to keep all of this in mind here. But let's go back to the riots and what we've been seeing in the past few days. So Trump's response has been a bit lackluster. Now, he did give a speech today that was pretty good. We can watch that in a few here. But we haven't seen enough from him. We haven't. We just haven't. And I'm told that in the most recent Tucker, which again, we can watch tonight, Tucker wasn't pulling any punches. I believe Trump has invoked the Insurrection Act, which limits to some extent the constraints of the Posse Comitatus Act. The Posse Comitatus Act stipulates that the U.S. Army, the Navy, and later Air Force, and then later it was through executive order stated that the Navy was included in that, cannot be used for domestic law enforcement. So if you have stuff going on in Virginia, you can't call in the Army to handle it. But the Insurrection Act allows for the National Guard and then any troops, additional troops from other branches of the armed forces, if necessary, to come in and to restore order domestically. So that's what Trump has invoked. So this, keep in mind, this is, I don't want to say it's too little too late. I usually try to be pretty charitable when it comes to the Trump. You know, that does not mean it not being critical, just not being, you know, bitter and snarky and kind of maybe missing out on some of the, because that's the thing. If you're too petulant and you're too bitter when it comes to politics, when it comes to Trump, you're probably going to miss out on stuff, right? If your constant narrative is, oh, I hate Trump, I hate Trump, Trump's terrible. You might miss out when he does some good stuff. You might, you know, fail to account for some of the obstacles and the limitations that he faces in implementing these policies. But I've been very critical of Trump, so we definitely don't want to be cheerleaders. But we want Trump to succeed. And I absolutely do. I want to be able to praise Trump. And I do when he does something good. So it's good that he's doing this now more than, you know, better late than never, I suppose. But you've just had this law and order doesn't look good for him. It doesn't look good. People elected a law and order president. I mean, the Twin Cities have been razed to the ground, not entirely, obviously. You've seen all of these clips of white people being beaten to a pulp by Antifa, by black people, just for being white, being conservative. Tons of property damage. I don't know how much damage has been done. I'll say this. I mean, I don't support like the breakdown of civil order. I don't support people going out and just, you know, rampaging through things. But I'm not shedding any tears over Target or all of these other big corporations, over businesses owned by people who support the policies that have gotten us to this point, right? You've seen some of these business owners who have had their livelihoods burned, who have said, well, you know, it's, you know, I still support what they're doing. And, you know, oh, we can always rebuild the business, but can't bring George Floyd back from the dead, you know, stuff like this. So if someone raised my business down, I would not be virtue signaling, even if it was like a right-wing protest or something. And obviously right-wing protests don't get violent. Right-wing protests don't involve burning stuff down. But even hype is that. So even if there was a cause I agreed with that was pillaging, and I would not be virtue signaling. But again, this leads us to, let's wrap up on Trump real quick. So I think the calculation really was that they were hoping that these would die out. And a big part of the Trump administration's re-election, the Trump campaign's re-election strategy has been reaching out to black voters. It's incredibly ill-fated. It's not going to work. Trump won, I believe, 6% of the black vote in 2016, but that, I would be surprised if it's above 8%, right? You've had Blexit, you've had all, you know, Diamond and Silk being promoted endlessly. You've had, and now Donald Trump, Mike Pence calling out racism, right? We have no evidence that neither the McMichaels nor Derek Chauvin were motivated by racism, but Mike Pence thinks he knows. Mike Pence is tweeting against racism, which is utterly, utterly insane, utterly insane. It's good that Trump is doing something now. He's invoked the Insurrection Act. We're hearing that order is going to be restored. We did have the National Guard deployed in Minneapolis. So that was last night, I believe. So Minneapolis was a little more under control. My prediction for where this goes is while it does look like there are more protests in D.C., I think they'll be done by the end of the week. Now, the important thing to keep in mind here is, you know, the L.A. riots lasted for 6 days. The L.A. riots lasted for 6 days, but they were shut down through the invocation of the Insurrection Act and through harsh but necessary law and order, right? And that's how we're going to have to shut these things down. Ferguson lasted for around 2 weeks, and then you had the second wave in November of 2014 when Darren Wilson was either, you know, the charges were dropped or he was acquitted. I forget how it exactly went. And then you had the third wave take place on the anniversary of Mike Brown's shooting. I believe that's August 9th of 2015 was the second anniversary. But, you know, 2 weeks is pretty long for these protests. So I don't know if we're going to see these for 2 weeks. But I predicted that they'd be over by the weekend, but that's clearly not the case. They have somewhat lost some energy over the weekend. But guys, the important thing to keep in mind is that we're in uncharted territory here. We have the coronavirus that has created a lot of uncertainty. There are tons of people who don't have to go to work anymore. There are tons of people who aren't in school anymore. And there have been many scholars, many academics who have written about the fact, not most, or I don't know, maybe most, but definitely not all, but in many revolutions, what you need or a big factor there is having a mass of unemployed young men, right? And that's what we have now. These people aren't going back to their jobs because they don't have jobs. Many of these people don't have jobs. They're not in school. So that is going to serve as fuel for the fire. It's going to make it harder to put this out. Usually what happens is you have a few days of rioting, a few days of looting, and people, once the tear gas comes, once the rubber bullets come, people say, okay, well, I've had my fix. I've stole a bunch of 40s of, you know, old English, of Mickey's or something. I've, got a new flat screen TV, and I got to beat up some white people. And all right, now, you know, it's kind of a risk-reward thing, so now they're going to go home. But I don't know if we're going to see that. We could see civil unrest continue for weeks or maybe even months throughout the summer, off and on. Keep in mind that if this case develops, if the case against Derek Chauvin develops in a way that Black Lives Matter and others on the left don't like, yeah, you're going to see a second wave, a third wave, and so forth. So it's really anyone's guess as to where this goes. I don't know. I think that the first phase of this is going to, by the end of this week, within a week from now, is going to have largely died out. But it will be there. It will absolutely be there. And I mean, the protesters have been allowed to mostly run wild up until recently. You did see police. You know, there was a curfew declared from 11 p.m. to, I believe, 6 a.m. last night in D.C. And most of the protesters had dispersed by around midnight. I was watching a lot of the streams. And once the cops started coming in with rubber bullets, with tear gas, with mace, people got over it and went home. And it looks like the cops were using tear gas today to, make sure that Donald Trump was able to get to St. James Church, which is very close to the White House. By the way, that was almost burned. It was burned last night. It was got lit on fire last night. I don't think it burned down. But still, burning a church, that's an incredibly evil act. That is an evil act. You're not just transgressing against political order. You're transgressing against God and against religion and the good at that point. Yeah, I don't know. People were making Varg jokes on Twitter last night. Yeah, that's like, that's what that reminds me of. It reminds me of these black metal, you know, edgelords in Norway in, what was it, the 90s, went around burning churches, who were all into Satanism and stuff. And yeah, it's just totally despicable behavior. You've had Catholic churches vandalized. These people are rebelling against God. They are. And if you're not a Catholic, if you're not a Christian in general, then you probably don't get that. But there is a moral order to the universe, and part of that entails hierarchy, that entails virtue, that entails, you know, differentiation between the sexes, traditional gender roles. It entails some degree of separation between peoples, not in some extreme, you know, ethnic cleansing way or anything like that. But everything that I'm convinced that everything that the left is pushing for is at odds with, you know, any higher ideals, whether you believe in God. You know, Neo-Reaction has this concept, non, G-N-O-N, stands for nature, or nature's God. It's a good way for secular people and religious people to come together and kind of understand that there is a moral order to the universe. And if you believe that, that's just how nature, it just came about, no one put it there, then yeah, you can believe that. For political purposes, we can have common ground there. But part of what got me back to Catholicism and, you know, just religion in general is the kind of the recognition that there is a moral order to the universe. And I just remember reading, like, wow, all of this sounds so familiar, you know, and so many of these moral realizations that I came to, and I was like, wow, that's like what I was taught as a kid in Catholicism. And then looking into Catholicism and seeing that there's tons of Catholic teaching in defense of identitarianism, basically, in some cases. There are no moral imperatives against, you know, becoming a minority in your homeland. All of the left Caths and, you know, these liberal pastors and priests and so forth, they're just totally at odds with stuff. So I'm not trying to proselytize too much here, but when you have these people going out burning churches, it's pretty extreme. So Trump went out there with the Bible, and the optics were pretty good. You had Lafayette Square pretty safely, so it was secured. You know, there weren't any protesters there. They were cleared out. we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens tonight in DC. I think that's going to be the place to watch. There will be protests in Oakland, Portland, other places, I'm sure. This is not over yet. But I think DC is going to be the most interesting to watch, because when it's happening in the president's, literally in the president's front yard, you start wondering what the hell is going on. Now, there were many, many Trump supporters who were upset with the lack of inaction on behalf of the president. Or you had people from, you had Cassie Dillon taking issue with it. You had Ryan Gerdusky, Ann Coulter, Tucker Carlson. You had all these others. And what's the reason why? Well, we talked about that. We touched on that briefly earlier, a few minutes ago. The Trump administration is trying to win over black voters. It's not a good strategy. I don't think we should. I don't think the Trump campaign should be hostile to black people, obviously. But as, in terms of, you know, when you're letting cities burn to the ground to try to get, you know, 1-2% of 13% of the population, something's wrong. And I, you know, people always want to blame Jared Kushner. He deserves a lot of blame. He's not the only advisor feeding Trump, you know, bad information, bad strategy. But it's, you have all of these voices of moderation around Trump. And that's actually the last thing that we need. Normally, moderation is a good thing. But when moderation means preserving the status quo, not really getting anything significant done, passing criminal justice reform, I mean, geez, Jared Kushner in particular deserves the blame for that. Maybe not everything. Yeah, it's just so ill-advised. It's so ill-advised. So many Trump people are just totally upset with this. They're totally upset with this, and they have the right to be. So Trump is, it again, better late than never. I support him doing whatever is necessary. Put the protest down, I should say. And I, we'll see if he does it. I think we'll probably see more of a response now that he has done this. But we can't be beholden to the fear of being racist. That has to come to an end one way or another, sooner rather than later. We're seeing that play out. This isn't just about, you know, conservative talking points. This isn't just about being afraid to post edgy stuff on Facebook to your friends and family. We're actually seeing this play out on a policy level. We're seeing cities razed to the ground because the Trump's administration, we're seeing white people senselessly beaten because they're white, targeted for being white. You're seeing that simply because the Trump administration doesn't want to be perceived as racist. It's insane. It's really insane. But that has to change eventually. It does. It is important to put things in perspective. The number of lives lost in the Watts riots of, not just lives lost, the number of lives lost, people arrested, people injured, property damage in the Watts riots, 65 in the 91, pardon me, was it 92? Yeah, I think it was the 92 LA riots, is likely, once these George Floyd riots conclude, is the George Floyd riots aren't going to be as bad as the LA riots. They're just not. But they're still significant, and they could have lasting effects throughout the summer, particularly if people don't get back to work. And I'm not the first person to point this out, but isn't it funny that all of this, the usual suspects telling us that, oh, these conservatives are going out and protesting against the lockdown. This is so irresponsible. Oh, look at these terrorists. They're going to get everyone infected, stuff like this. But then now that you have a regime sanctioned, a regime approved, if not regime supported, string of violent riots breaking out, now you don't hear too much about social distancing then. So it's worth pointing out that both lockdowns and the George Floyd protests, these have been political things from the beginning. They have. They've been politicized from the beginning, the best interests of our ruling class. So let's talk about that dynamic a little bit here. It's important to keep in mind that the way that power works in this country is largely, it's called a high-low. It's a high-low dynamic. You have a ruling class, which consists of academics, people in the political establishment, billionaires, you know, big tech companies, the deep state, intelligence agencies, the media in particular. I mean, the media, we're always harping on about the media, but that really is the most powerful tool for, you know, keeping people in line and promoting these. I mean, the media just is responsible for history at this point. They get to determine what people talk about, what people don't talk about, what people get mad about. And, you know, as we discussed with the situation of the, you know, the fake Antifa account that's being blamed on, you know, IE, they get to just kind of, you know, provide unsubstantiated claims, and that just becomes accepted as fact. We see that play out before our eyes. And it's important to keep in mind that's what history is, right? They are writing history before our eyes, and they're fabricating it. If nothing changes, like all of these false narratives that we've been pushing back against for years, that's just going to be the history books. And isn't that terrifying, right? Isn't it terrifying to think that these people just get to make up whatever they want, and that will be accepted as facts? You know, our kids will be taught that in schools. But we're going to win. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to blackpill anyone here. We are going to win, and that's not going to happen. We're going to tell the truth in history books when we go forward. So But the high-low is, yeah, when you have the cathedral, as Moldbub put it, somewhat of an antiquated term, but you have the cathedral, right, all of these various power centers for the globalist establishment that rile up sexual, racial, and ethnic minorities against the middle, right? You have the urban poor, black people, ideologically brainwashed anarchists, these kids that go to, you know, universities and get indoctrinated into this disgusting progressive ideology. You get all of those and you pit them physically, politically, economically, you know, and culturally against Middle America, and that what we often refer to as historic America. It's hard to argue that Trump supporters, and I would just say right-wing populists in general, people in the dissident right included in that, it's hard to argue that, like, we aren't historical America. We know what the founding fathers believed in. We know what people thought all the way up until, you know, our grandparents' generation. We know what wasn't controversial. This stuff wasn't controversial that long ago. So we're the rightful inheritors of this country. And it's being stolen from us. And it largely has been stolen from us, but it's not. The battle isn't anywhere near over. And in fact, the pushback to the theft of our sovereignty, of our history, of our people's destiny, is continues to grow. So I'm very optimistic. I'm not black-pilled about this stuff. Obviously, it'd be great to not be in this situation, but we... Yeah, this is just what we've inherited, and we're going to make it right. So that's the high-low. You have the elites riling up the people at the lower end of the spectrum against us. And it's important to keep in mind, you had all of these brain-dead takes on the right, on the left, from various subcultures and factions, trying to characterize these riots as if they were, you know, fighting the system, right? You had Wignats talking about how they're fighting back against neoliberalism. You had people talking about how this threatens the establishment. If you had people making, you know, issuing these takes and you valued their opinion previously, you probably should get your talking points and your political analysis from better people. The idea that, I mean, just look at who's endorsed these riots, right? Democratic politicians, Joe Biden, you know, Target, right? You think Target having a building being one of Target's, you know, nearly 2,000 stores being razed to the ground is somehow sticking it to the man. It's like you got some of these people out there whose political ideology is basically, you know, the anarchy symbol shirt that they bought from Hot Topic when they're 13, and it's never changed, even if they've read right-wing political philosophy and they're really autistic about the Twitter right-wing dissident stuff. It's never changed. It hasn't changed. If you think that this is sticking it to the man, it's just this utterly inauthentic faux revolution. This is just like wearing buying a Che Guevara shirt, you know, at your local mall for $20.99, made in China, made from, you know, slave labor as a result of economic globalization, and then wearing it to an Occupy Wall Street protest. That's all that this is. These people that think this is somehow screw the police, screw the corporations. No, that's not what's happening at all. This is anarcho-tyranny, which is totally, that's an important thing to keep in mind. Anarcho-tyranny, which again is basically it's somewhat of a high-low dynamic in there, is where you have people at the bottom, right? People who are criminals, low lives, degenerates, being able to get away with doing almost whatever they want, particularly when it's in a political context, particularly when they're fighting for globalism, even if they don't understand it in those terms. When those people are allowed to do whatever they want, but middle America law-abiding people, particularly white people, are held to an unreasonably high standard, right? So again, you can go out and you can riot. You could be one of these looters having your face shown on TV. You're not going to get charged with anything. You can go out and sucker punch a white person. You're not going to face any charges. And there have been some charges, sure, but most of these people will not face charges. And I think were most of the charges against the people who rioted during Trump's inauguration, weren't those dropped anyways? Even if you get charged, even if they put you in jail for a little bit, you'll probably be let go. Whereas if you tweet the wrong thing, you could have the FBI show up at your house. That's how it works. Those are the times we live in here. So clearly very sick, clearly the kind of situation that we don't want to be in, but that's why it's important for us to continue telling the truth, because we're the only ones that can really do that fully. There are some people on the right, bigger names, more entrenched in conservatism, who are better at, you know, who are going to be able to tell the truth. And, you know, people like Ann Coulter, Mark Dice, Tucker Carlson, yeah, they can do that pretty well. But we're the only ones who just have, because to be a dissident is to consciously make the decision to step outside the bounds of regime, you know, globalist approved discourse. We're the ones that have said, you know, that doesn't mean we say all sorts of anything that we want. Obviously, we have to be strategic and don't say stupid, indefensible, you know, unnecessarily edgy things. Sure. But it's, you know, people like me, people like Nick, people like Vince James and all of the others we work with, we've made the decision to not care about what you can say and you can't say in terms of, you know, what conservatism says that you can't say. Even the bigger names in mainstream conservative politics who say these good things, I already named some of them, they haven't taken the full step outside of the cave. And for them, you know, maybe it's a little, for some of them, it might be the right decision just because, you know, they've got livelihoods to protect and whatever else. But that's why the dissident right is so important, because we tell the truth. We're not owned by anyone. If we're owned by anyone, it's you guys, right? And that keeps us accountable, right? The fact that this movement is largely funded by super chats and, you know, on occasion, a bigger donation here and there. There are big donors that behind the scenes give a little bit more. But a big donor for us gives a few thousand a year. That's nowhere near, you know, the level of donations the Wilkes brothers give to, the Daily Wire and Ben Shapiro and so forth. So it's important to keep that in mind. But anarcho-tyranny, which is what we're seeing here, is part and parcel of globalist rule. So the idea that you would have to just be so profoundly naive and clueless to see these rebellions, to see these riots as authentic and meaningful rebellions against globalism, against neoliberalism. It just isn't the case, right? Why do you think these riots were allowed to go on for so long? Why do you think these liberal mayors and governors decided to do nothing about them? Because they did a calculation and they determined that it's actually more beneficial to them and to the agenda that they represent to let their cities burn to the ground, to let innocent people have their livelihoods destroyed, get attacked, right? They decided it would be better to do that than to appear racist. That's the same thing the Trump administration has done. Now, clearly, the Trump administration hasn't been as bad as, say, Jacob Frey in that regard, but it's the same thought process. It's the same thought process. People are afraid to defy the cathedral. People are afraid to defy the high priests of progressivism. And we have to get past that eventually. At this point, people who are more involved in more electoral politics do have to account for that at some point. But until it's all about institutional control. At the end of the day, we can talk about the individual policy things, ending wars in the Middle East, bringing the troops home. We can talk about good trade deals. We can obviously talk about the demographics and, you know, affirmative action, anti-white policies, immigration. But at the end of the day, no policy you implement matters so long as the centers of power in this country continue to promote progressivism and globalism, which are basically, progressivism is the left-wing form of globalism. And it's more dominant than the right-wing form, because that's the direction that things are going in. It's breaking down the traditional order of American civilization. That's progressivism is the kind of the corrosive agent that is applied to civilization, to Western civilization in particular, to break things down for global capital. That's the best way of looking at it. So when you have these people going out there rioting in defense, just in this totally support of a false narrative about racist cops killing unarmed blacks in like epidemic numbers, all against this is about anarcho-tyranny. This is about keeping people afraid. This is about building up these left-wing movements. And it's about getting normies on board with Black Lives Matter. It really is. It really is. Because it's, you see all of this stuff happen, right? It's the kind of thing where the more this builds up, the fewer people that will be willing to actually go against it. Position a lot of normies probably have is, well, I don't support the destruction and so forth. And then they can blame the white people for that. They say, but I support Black Lives Matter. And I've talked to many people whose normie friends, even people that were previously apolitical, or maybe some people who are slightly conservative, siding with Black Lives Matter on this. So this stuff is spreading. It is spreading. It absolutely is. Now, there's always going to be a counter reaction too. There are people I've talked to many people whose friends and families have been red-pilled by some of these horrific clips of just the utter savagery and barbarism that we've seen on these streets. So it goes both ways. These protests in no way threaten demographic replacement, threaten, you know, the power of intelligence agencies, threaten economic globalization. They certainly don't threaten mass surveillance, right? The consolidation of power. They don't threaten any of these things. These are, you know, the powers that be have determined that, you know, even if these riots aren't entirely beneficial for their agenda, they're willing to tolerate these, right? It's kind of a cost of doing business. If you're going to And it's worth pointing out, too, that the police unions are somewhat of a last, maybe not all of them, but they're somewhat of a last bastion of independence from globalist rule, right? If you look at, what is it, the NYPD police, I don't remember exact one, but all the NYPD, this one police union in New York does is just totally haranguing and chastise Bill de Blasio on a regular basis. So it's actually a subject I want to look into a little bit more and make for an interesting show. But some of these police unions, I think, are kind of like one of the last holdouts from the before times, where you have a lot of white conservative cops, not only white cops, but conservative cops who are not down with progressivism, not down with Black Lives Matter and stuff, who still, for, you know, just purely out of the result of political inertia, have control over their fiefdom. And I think there's an argument to be made that a lot of this Black Lives Matter stuff is about, you know, demonizing the cops and breaking that down. And, you know, maybe eventually getting, you know, just making sure that the police leadership is going to be totally owned by progressives. You've seen footage of some of these cops kneeling for George Floyd. You've seen there was one guy in chief of police in some smaller, I believe, California city, saying something along the lines of, you know, he's a Latino and he's against, you know, the white supremacy violence, whatever. So there is kind of a war on the police too. Just viewing the police, oh, it's a police state. Oh, all of the cops this, all of the cops that. I can assure you that the average cop, even if he is, you know, kind of forced to by his job, carry out the will of globalists, corrupt politicians on a regular basis, the average cop is far closer to us than to the ruling class. Absolutely. These people mostly vote Trump. But it is important to keep in mind that the police will do what they're told. If the police were told to go to my house and, like, beat me up, they would do it. So we do support cops that do a good job. Sure. And once we restore order, the police will absolutely go along with that, right? If all of a sudden Patrick Casey is president of America, or if Donald Trump's president for life, you know, these are LARPy fantasies, sure. But, you know, the kind of stuff that we would implement, the cops would go along with that. We wouldn't have to worry about them rising up. At the end of the day, you want a police force that's going to do what it's told. So if you're going to take issue with the cops doing this in one instance, doing that in another instance, the virtue of a police officer is doing what you're told, right? So, you know, it's we shouldn't hate cops by any means. We should understand that most cops are probably more sympathetic to our politics than they are to to progressivism or something. But at the same time, you got to understand it's like, because they're cops, they're going to do what they're told. And that does not mean that even if they might sympathize with our political views to some extent, they're not, you know, if given tyrannical and draconian orders to crack down on us, they're not going to do it. So overly, you know, you can look at the police officers as individuals and understand these guys are probably mostly on our page in terms of being right wing conservative. Maybe they're not ideologically identitarian or anything. You can look at them as individuals and understand that. But then when you look at them as an institution, you do have to understand and they're going to do what they're told at the end of the day. So it's a nuanced take. You don't have to go full, you know, we love our cops, they're all perfect, they're just totally on our side. Now, they'll lock you up if they're told to. But on the other side of things, you do have to, the whole, like, screw the pigs, man, that I see from some people on, like, right-wing Twitter, that's, like, cringy. And no, we should, it's just not the case. In our ideal society, and this is what totally, one of the many things that separates us from the left, we absolutely want cops. There would absolutely be police officers, and police officers would be given free rein to, obviously within the bounds of the law, crack down on anarchist scum, on, you know, rioters, looters, criminals. Yeah, we want to have, like, real law and order. That doesn't necessarily mean authoritarianism or whatever. Just having rule of law really be enforced is good enough. You don't necessarily need, like, rule of man, right? There's a difference between the two. So, but isn't it funny that rule of law is considered fascism at this point, right? Because fascism is rule of man. That's not the only form of rule of man, right? Because you have monarchy and fascism. Those are both technically would be considered rule of man. Doesn't mean you don't have laws, but you mean at the end of the day, there are men who can decide what the law is on their own. Whereas with rule of law, it's more of a liberal thing where you as classical liberalism, Enlightenment era, political theory. Rule of law is where you have laws set up that people either vote on or agree on to some extent. There's some kind of democratic or ostensibly democratic process. And then people obey the laws rather than the subjective dictates of one person. Now there are pros and cons to each side. But at this point, if you support rule of law, you are a fascist. That's not what fascism is. But that just goes to show that, it's also worth pointing out, it's not that the people on the other side, leftists, anarchists, you know, the blue checkmark pundits and so forth, it's not as if these people hate the law. They would totally be fine with there being laws that would put us in jail for tweeting the wrong thing. The left is best understood as just like a real raw, naked will to power. What principles they have, they are willing to totally sacrifice in pursuit of power. Maybe there's some that they won't, but that's, I would argue, even if there's some principles they're not willing to sacrifice and repudiate in the pursuit of power, they probably have more of a long-term calculation being done that, you know, they will actually have more power by holding onto these principles. So it's important to keep that in mind, you know, the differences between the right and left and so forth. So in conclusion, I think that we are going to see these riots continue for at least another week in some form or another. I don't think they will last for months and months. You will see an escalating crackdown across the country. And contrary to what some have claimed on Twitter that, you know, the state no longer has a monopoly on violence. Oh, these mobs are getting so powerful. They're overpowering the police. Right. In the case of the Third Precinct in Minneapolis that was burned down. No, the cops are letting this happen. Right? The state's letting this happen. When the state decides that this is over, it's going to be over. And we're getting to that point. But again, given that we are in uncertain territory, uncharted waters, as a result of the coronavirus and the subsequent economic damage, mass unemployment and so forth, we'll have to see how this plays out. This could kind of be something, even if this particular George Floyd rioting dies down, maybe there's some other knucklehead who gets killed by the cops doing something he shouldn't have done. Maybe there's even a totally unjustified killing of a black guy where it's totally unequivocal that the cop acted wrongly. I mean, yeah, that happens from time to time. Sure. I wouldn't say that every black person who gets killed by the cops did something wrong. No, but oftentimes there are criminals who, you know, point a gun at a cop or, you know, they're trying to steal the cop's gun, whereas things that you just don't do. So that's the important thing to keep in mind is that this summer is going to be very interesting. I think we're going to see some crazy stuff happen. We already have, right? The coronavirus, you've had the George Floyd rioting, you've had all of the stuff with Ahmaud Arbery. And now you've got a re-election campaign, Donald Trump running against presumably Joe Biden. Joe Biden I can't see anyone else getting the nomination at this point. So we live in interesting times, for better or for worse. And I think that, just to reiterate, I think we're going to see a lot of unrest this summer, even if these George Floyd protests don't last throughout the summer. And I don't think they will. Again, there will be, I'm predicting there will, if the case doesn't go the way Black Lives Matter wants, there will be second and even perhaps third waves of social unrest. But I think that people, just given how many people are unemployed and out of work and don't have too much to do, I think that you will. And a lot of these people are getting paid too. These people are getting paid unemployment. They're getting Trump bucks, people who are otherwise on welfare too. Certain demographics, very prone to rioting and also, you know, prone to being on welfare, abusing welfare. So I think that you're going to see a crazy summer. So on that note, we will conclude. Thank you and see you next time.